Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani. Budget 2023 is in the season, and of course many companies as well as employers are thinking about how this is going to impact them moving into 2023. It's going to be a big year because this is the first full year that we are going in a post-pandemic recovery period. Joining us for today is Derek Toh, the founder and CEO of Hiatly. Hiatly is, of course, a job platform that uses offline to online or online to offline concept to connect job seekers with the right jobs at the right company. It is a matchmaking work that has been seen through the ages and have seen a lot of changes over the time as well and the evolution that involves around it. Of course, right now we're looking at the application of artificial intelligence and how is this going to make things a little bit more productive for both job seekers as well as company makers. Derek, thanks for taking time to speak with us. Let's walk through with some of the ideas on Hiatly before we jump to Budget 2023. Do you feel that the kind of work that you're doing, while it has been seen through various forms by a lot of competitors in your scene, it still needs a lot of evolution? And how are the evolution that is Hiatly doing right now going to be a little bit different from, say, past competitors that have tried to do this before?
Yeah, so thanks for having me, Ibrahim. So I think the recruitment space is a very big space. And we have a lot of dominant players that have been around for like 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So what we find interesting here is in order to get to the next level, there are sort of two groups of recruitment companies. There's one that's pure tech. Mm-hmm. That means you're thinking about your job portals like social media, for example, LinkedIn, mm-hmm. and they don't have any human element. At the same time, you have the pure agency kind of company. So these are very low tech, they are mainly driven by people and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. these operate separately. Mm-hmm. So for Hiatly, we find that because recruitment is essentially a human, you know, it is a human activity, right? Like hiring one person for another person, you most of the time you actually need to talk to someone to make that decision. Mm-hmm. So we are combining these two worlds using AI. Mm. Right, and we believe this is what will give a really, really big advantage. Mm. And it's very different from what most other people are doing. So you will see new startups coming up. They are still thinking we are doing pure tech. Mm. And there's always new recruitment agencies coming out all the time. But there's not many that's trying to put these two worlds together in one.
Yeah, of course, we're looking at also the kind of offline work that needs to be done, right? Prior to this interview, you're talking to me about the sizable number of people that you have working for Hiatly right now, which took me by surprise because I would have assumed that, you know, somebody that's a company that is driven by AI would not normally need the kind of number of employees that you currently have. Talk through us through the idea of why offline work is still needed, despite the fact that you have AI. And talk to us through the idea of how productivity per employee is actually increasing, no matter what the absolute number of the number of people that you're hiring right now is being practiced.
Yeah, so we are not a pure tech platform. So we combine offline, online to offline, and especially for recruitment, we do not think that it is possible to completely replace the human being, which is why even though platforms like LinkedIn have flourished, recruitment agencies have flourished alongside LinkedIn. LinkedIn hasn't replaced the recruitment agency. Mm. So when it comes to AI, right, what it actually does is, if we are trying to build our own recruitment agency, if you like, that's integrated with all the data through AI, what it means that the person that is recruiting at Hiatly is much more efficient than someone that doesn't have the AI or data. Mm. So right now, for example, in our company, we estimate that the productivity ratio, we use this term to kind of estimate how efficient a consultant is about 2 times the times of the market average at the moment. Mm-mm. Because they have access to the data from our job platform that's being processed through our technology, right? But you look across different startups, right? I think in general, this tends to be the case where there is a online element integrated with a physical element. Like for example, if you look at Grab, I mean, they are a tech company, but there is a physical element to their business where they have their riders, they have their drivers, etc. You know, even look at Carsome, which is obviously another unicorn, there's a physical element. They're a tech company, and then they have all the, you know, the places where they take in your car, they service your car, etc. Right? So, a lot of the potential is, you know, using a very tech-enabled or AI-enabled approach in the physical world, and it, therefore it also means that we hire a lot of people, right, because of this. But the productivity or efficiency of the company is a lot higher because of the technology.
Okay. Also, I want to learn a little bit better about some of the items that you've seen over the past year. We're entering into October now, so basically 9 months, three quarters have lapsed. What were the kind of elements that you've seen when it comes to taking or hiring the hiring landscape for Malaysia in a post-pandemic environment? What has changed? And perhaps go run through with us the concept of whether some of these changes are permanent or more or less a stopgap measure until we go into full recovery mode.
Yeah, so 2020 was obviously a bit of a slower year. And I think mostly because companies were a bit more cautious. 2021, we actually saw a little bit of boom in recruitment. So I actually imagine there are two reasons, right? The companies that were previously cautious saw an opportunity to grow fast. You know, everyone predicted that, okay, I think the pandemic's going to kind of phase out over some time. So let's grow aggressively now. And now, as we enter 2022, we find that this is accelerating. So there have been companies that were even slower to kind of, as in they had the more of a wait-and-see approach to growth, that have seen that actually it's kind of almost back to normal already. And they're also aggressively hiring. So in terms of us as a company, we are growing. But I even know people in the industry, as in like other recruitment companies, et cetera, and I know that they are growing very well. And it's a reflection that the market is doing very well in terms of recruitment. You know, so it's not just one particular company that's doing well. Across the board, many recruitment businesses are actually doing well.
What about the concept of working from an office or a hybrid? Do you feel that that is going to change permanently as well?
This is interesting. I know that...
Or is it different sector to sector, size of businesses, all that?
Yes, I think it's due to the nature... it's largely due to the nature of the business. So if you are, even before COVID, for example, Hiredly, we are a tech company, we've always adopted remote working as an option.
Even before the pandemic?
Even before pandemic. And a lot of tech companies can do this because of the nature of our business. Because we're a tech company, there are a lot of like software developers, etc. That's always been the case. So obviously COVID forced everyone to change. And then people realized that, hey, wait a minute, my company, even though it wasn't very obvious, we can operate remotely. So now we reach a phase where there is, even though things are opening up, some companies would still find that I prefer everyone coming into the office, even though we figured out how to work remotely, because maybe there are certain disadvantages of working remotely, like collaboration is generally a lot faster if you're in person, and the connection to your colleagues is also a little bit different. You know, so I give a simple example. Many people find that if you already know your colleague very well, working remotely is not a problem at all.
Yeah.
But if you're new, let's say you just joined the company and you're new and from day one you've been remote, it's so difficult to build that connection
rapport
to your colleagues.
Yeah.
Yes. So many companies say, look, I want people to come back. But there are obviously employees that still feel that, hey, but we operated without having to come back. Why should we? So there's going to be a bit of a tussle, I imagine. So some companies will still adopt hybrid as a way to attract talent like this. Like, so, okay, look, you don't go in, we allow you to work remotely. So we have to kind of wait a year or so to kind of see how things settle down. But I imagine there's going to be a large proportion of companies that will stay remote or hybrid compared to pre-COVID. But it's not really going to be like, oh, you know, every company will want to do hybrid. It's not really going to
be impossible.
The case. Yes.
All right. Well, there's still plenty more that we need to unpack, but we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a bit more about budget 2023 wish list with Derek Toh of Hiredly. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me in the studio Derek Toh, the founder and CEO of Hyatly. Derek, very recently you published a 2023 budget wish list talking about the idea of improving graduate employability. You want hiring of grants and soft skills training. You're talking about elevating and improving the lives of Rakyat through encouragement of foreign direct investment. All this is very much consistent with some of the guests that I've been having on the show. Say, for instance, the HR government training company, HRD Corp, was also talking about, you know, soft skills training and many more. Coursera was on the show as well, talking about this. You know, we're talking about a continued and continuous human development training skills. And I'm not just talking about, say, coding or any of that stuff. I'm talking about interactions, client servicing, team management, you know, those kind of stuff, which you know exactly what I'm talking about. Do you feel that this, all this, can be further exemplified or fleshed out in Budget 2023? What do you think about this?
Yes, 100% I agree. In fact, from my experience, I mean, so you differentiate between hard skills and soft skills. Hard skills is obviously going to be very important, but I find that the people that go really far in their career actually have soft skills as well. Like being able to communicate is a very important skill, regardless of any, almost anything that you do, whether you're an accountant, to a software developer, to a salesperson, marketing person, the ability to communicate is very important. So if the government is willing to invest more in developing the soft skills of the rakyat, you know, through this, you know, grants and training activities, right, it actually elevate the talent in general. It applies across the board to almost any job. Right, the ability to communicate very well. In fact, I would even say, if you look at people at the top jobs sometimes, I think 60-70% of their work is communication.
100%.
Right? Like being great at communicating gives someone a significant advantage.
They have their C-suite and their minus one to help them with the organization of their company. But to communicate out, not just external stakeholders, internal stakeholders as well. If you have a CEO that is poorly a poor communicator, you're not going to get far.
Yes.
In terms of getting the organization to do wonderful things.
That's right. Because it's sort of like you are representing the company. You speak for the
not
company.
Sort of like you are
you
representing
are, yes.
the company. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would take it as that you are the personification of the company.
Yes.
So when that when that thinking happens, what is stopping from government in terms of allowing for greater contribution of skills training and soft skills to take place in corporate Malaysia?
I'm not sure what is actually stopping them. I can see that they are actually trying, right? That is in like that. For example, no, not trying hard enough. You think,
my friend, trying is, you know, Yoda said, "What the do or don't do, don't try," something like that. Something to that effect. But yeah, I mean, this is critical, right? We're looking at Malaysia falling further behind. You're right in terms of foreign direct investments or domestic direct investments. Companies are really thinking hard about not just trying to retain talent, but try to make the talent that they have do more.
Yes.
As what your own folks in Hyatly is doing right
That's
now.
That's right.
Right,
yes.
So what would be some of the wish lists that you have when it comes to the budget 2023? What should be inside the budget, you know, concretely, that you think could help government achieve these ideals of better soft skills training?
Right. So I think right now what the government is actually doing is they allocated a lot of money to get the graduates back into work, right?
Mm.
And I can see this, they've allocated a certain amount of money and different agencies are using their own approach to try to do this.
Mm.
So I've looked through, again, at a very high level, you know, many, many different agencies are claiming that they help a few thousand get hired, a few thousand get hired here and there, etc. And it's a combination of, I believe, you know, they go through some kind of training process and they try to place them into a job, etc. And I think that's positive. So more of that is good. But at the same time, if you're talking 200 to 250,000 graduates every year, it's helpful, but it needs to be bigger than this, right? So either you do more of this, or if you feel that you're sort of hitting a limit, we have to try thinking about something different, right? So, but we can see some impact there. So I think that should definitely continue.
Okay. Right. What else do you think should be in the budget?
So getting graduates back into work is it's a very good immediate or short-term fix, if you like.
Yeah.
I like to think longer term, right? Or more medium, longer term. So mm-hmm. so this is like the symptom. People don't have jobs, right? Mm. But what's going to create jobs is you need the companies to create jobs. So actually encouraging more businesses to come to Malaysia, you know, invest and grow, is actually a very important part of this strategy. And obviously, we are a technology startup. I would include that in this group, right? So for encouraging foreign direct investment, I mean, it's proven to, I read somewhere that like even improve GDP, reduce unemployment, you know, so creating, you know, encouraging more and more employees to come in and build a business, then they will hire talent, right? They will hire people. And also within the startup space as well, I think this is more medium to long term, actually encouraging more startups to grow, right? Through a better ecosystem, through better funding support. Because as someone who's actually built a startup from ground zero,
from scratch, yeah.
Yes, I can see many, many challenges, you know, like, so, and I think we need a much more robust kind of funding ecosystem here to encourage more startups to grow. Because these startups are the ones that are going to create those future jobs. Fine. So if you want to upskill more people, move them from like B40 to M40, we need great jobs, we need high quality jobs, and technology seems to be the way. So I think investment in the startup scene is very, very important. Yeah. So if you have more customs come out, right, you have more grabs or, you know, whatnot, what the startups come, then it will then benefit the right. Yeah, right. Those jobs will be created. Yeah.
If there's one thing that is most needed inside the budget 2023, what do you think it would be?
More hiring incentives, soft skills and hiring incentives. So they sort of combine into one right now. I see the way they actually deploy.
Please elaborate.
Yeah. So it's where I believe what's happening is there are some grants for employers to hire job seekers or people who just graduated.
Yep.
They put them through training.
Yeah.
Right. So I believe the training is done by a third-party vendor.
Yes. Yeah.
And then after that, the employer is allowed or gets to hire this person for a few months. Mm. And that pay is actually subsidized.
Yeah.
Right. So there's two elements in one. There's a training element and then there's the hiring grant
element. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
all of which subsidized.
Yes. Yes. So I think more of that would have an immediate impact. Right. So definitely we need to do more. But again, I want to go back to say that this is just fixing the symptom. We need to think long term. And I think building a very strong startup ecosystem is actually very important. So actually encouraging more VCs or funds to come here, you know, and support all these technology companies to grow is actually very important as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Derek, for having a chat with us. Any final words before we conclude our conversation?
Well, I just want to say that I'm very optimistic to see that the economy seems to be going in the right direction. You know, in general, I look forward to see what's in the budget, right? And hopefully we can get more people back on their feet in jobs and get those that sort of like maybe they've taken a step back in the last few years because it's difficult to find a good job, get better jobs, right, over the next year or so.
That was fantastic. Thank you very much for talking to us. That was Derek Toh, the co-founder as well as the CEO of Hyatt.ly. Do stay on with us as we're going to have Dan Jones, partner of financial services, Oliver Wyman Digital, coming on after this. We'll be right back after these messages. Now we move on to some items revolving on the issue of the ability for us to talk about digital banks. Joining us on the line live is Dan Jones, partner financial services at Oliver Wyman Digital. Dan, let's talk a little bit more about the new recently issued 5 digital banking entrants to the sector. The opportunities for these new digital banks must be discussed, but at the same time, we have to also talk about the challenges of them and most importantly, the requirement that was set by Bank Negara Malaysia on them giving a clear pathway to profitability in the shortest time possible. But before we jump to all that, let's go through with regard to the new digital bank entrants and how this is going to be seen moving into 2023 and in relation to the budget as well, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Ibrahim. So I think it's a great opportunity for banks and customers in Malaysia alike. So the framework issued by Bank Negara Malaysia was to really drive financial inclusion, and I think there's a great opportunity to do that through developing mobile-first or web-based banking solutions that really adapt to the changing customer needs in Malaysia. We've seen small businesses have a number of challenges on banking their cash flow, the rise in digital payments, for example. All of these are everyday needs for customers that can be solved through the development of these new digital banks. So it's a very exciting time right now, I think, for both customers and the banking industry in Malaysia.
Now, of course, we're talking about a very saturated market. Where does the rise of digital banks mean, or what does the rise of digital banks mean for companies and other banks in Malaysia?
I think ultimately it means more competition in the market. It drives a need for further digitization of their products and services so that they can avoid being disrupted themselves. And what that ultimately means is that they need to get quicker at getting new features and products out to market, whilst also looking to lower the cost of operating and their technology base as well. And we've seen a huge rise in the availability of cloud-based fintech solutions in the market that allow both the digital bank and the incumbents in Malaysia to now disrupt them and develop innovative financial products at speed. But I think it also means that the incumbent banks need to play to their strengths. They've got many years behind them of experience and a lot of value and strength in their trusted brands that they've built up over the years. So they need to work out how to best leverage that and go into alternative business models and different ways to distribute financial services products to customers, ideally through more digital channels as per demand in the market right now for such services.
I want to draw upon Oliver Wyman's experience. You have, or your organization is indeed one of the global leaders in terms of management consulting. You've seen enough, case studies to see what works, what doesn't work, especially when we talk about Oliver Wyman Digital in specific. Maybe you can share with us some of the ideas that you have with regard to critical success factors for building a customer-centric bank and how to deliver this on digital.
Certainly. So I think first and foremost is develop a proposition and set of products that address core unmet customer needs. So at the start, throughout, and at the end of your projects, engage with customers frequently, get feedback, include them in the feedback cycle as you're developing your new products and services through interviews, focus groups, and so on, and never lose sight of the unmet needs that you're trying to solve for customers. So that's one critical success factor, but also the ability to move quickly using agile software development methodology. To get products out to market quickly is definitely key. It's not necessarily being first to market with something. It's making sure that the product really, really addresses those unmet needs. And I guess bring something different or a different way of banking to customers in Malaysia. There's other things as well. Engaging the regulator often and early is absolutely critical. Using the ecosystem of fintech partners that have developed around this space now, and leveraging their world-leading solutions and embedding those in your technology stack are other key points, as well as having a clear vision from the top and strong leadership. And we'll be exploring all of these points at the Global Islamic Finance Forum on October the 5th in a detailed panel discussion as well.
All right. Final question then. When it comes to taking the reins, the quote-unquote slogan for the Global Islamic Finance Forum, what would be some of the ideas that you will be sharing on this forum or at this forum?
So we'll be talking about how quickly a banking technology stack can be built, particularly on the Islamic side, using a number of the technology and fintech solutions that are out there now. we'll be covering the critical success factors of what it takes to build a digital bank from scratch and how that can be achieved in a relatively short space of time and how you can take that to market and launch with a real impact to then address those customer needs. So there's a whole host of success factors and lessons learned that we'll be covering at the Global Islamic Finance Forum to share with those who are there and watching.